This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here through the hour to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Want to talk with Zorba? Here's the toll-free number to call, 1-800-462-7413. Now, along with your calls, of course, some interesting research to talk about.
Who's on campus? Big issue in terms of kids' safety and what it means in the future.
Yeah, the campus we're on, the University of Wisconsin campus, a serious problem.
Absolutely.
And lots, maybe
absolutely.
Even most other college campuses
100%.
As well. 100%.
You know, Wisconsin is always labeled the number one party school, or maybe it's the number two party school, depending on the year. And the fact is, alcohol is always a big issue.
What else?
It fuels lots of stuff. And a jump in drug-related injuries. The Institute of Safe Medical Practice has looked at drug-related injuries, recommended that about 5,000 to 15,000 people over a period of time are dying of drug-related injuries. How do we make prescription drugs safer?
An important topic. It's been in the news recently. What's our recipe?
Swordfish steaks with olive salsa. Olive salsa, my favorite.
Adam Friedrich, our producer, has left out the swordfish steak and has dumped this olive stuff
on us. Olives are not your favorite thing, Tom. But for those of us who love olives, this is scrumptious.
Let me give you the toll-free number again, 800-462-7413. And Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener who's with us now from Nyack, New York. Hi.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Zorba.
What can we do for you?
Well, I had a question regarding an issue revolving around vertigo.
Vertigo.
I had an episode of it for the first time in my life about almost 2 months ago now.
Mm-hmm.
It was sort of classic in the way it manifested itself, where I just woke up one morning and turned my head to the side and everything started spinning.
Oh, yeah.
And that lasted probably, for like 2 or 3 days.
Wait a minute. Straight or every on and off?
Well, I found that if I steadied my head and looked into one particular spot, I could get it to stop turning.
Mm-hmm.
But anytime I did a slight turn of the head, like a tightened tilt to brush my hair or lean on the counter or anything, everything would kind of spin for a while.
Right, right. Vertigo is very disturbing unless you happen to be on a roller coaster and you're 12. In which case, it's not disturbing, or 5. Don't you remember as a kid how I used to roll around so the world would spin? Remember how much fun that was?
Exactly, right.
Not as an adult. I have no idea, and it's very interesting why kids like that and adults
say you wouldn't go on that for all the money in the world.
Tilt-a-world, forget it. Yeah. It's not my, I'm just, rolling around. It feels so good. Most of these are viral. They're usually viral problems that occur in the inner ear. Now, let me ask you, so you've got true vertigo. True vertigo is where the world appears to be spinning. Is that what actually happens, or do you just feel sort of dizzy?
Well, the classic case of the vertigo lasted probably for like 3 days.
Okay.
But after that, it became something else.
Mm-hmm.
And that lasted for another week and a half following it.
Wow.
And then after I was talking to people about it, everybody was giving me different stories about whether this is something. They're like, my mother used to have that. She would get it recurringly,
Right.
Or, I had it. I just had it for one day. Or I had that, but I had it for 3 months.
Right. Then I heard a friend who had it and they had a brain tumor and they're dead. You ought to see a doctor.
Yeah.
That's the other side of that tumor.
Well, people scared me of stuff like that.
Oh, no, absolutely. Anything
tell you.
For sure. Anything that goes on in your head, people automatically worry that there's something that, that is quite serious that goes on. Well, vertigo. Let me tell you, the most common cause is basically a virus. It affects the inner ear, the labyrinthine apparatus. That's the part of the inner ear where we have the semicircular canals. And basically, we have this fluid. And when the fluid doesn't work properly because of an infection, the fluid sludges in the wrong way and we get this sort of sensation of the world, that the world is spinning. It can take 2 or 3 days to 2 to 3 weeks to 2 to 3 months to get better. For some people, it takes a long time. I had this a number of years ago, just before ski season. I remember I got out of bed to go to work, and all of a sudden I swooned, and I almost fell down and hurt myself in the bed because the world was spinning, and I didn't expect that. And, after about a week of dealing with this thing, my wife Penny said, "Why don't you see a real doctor?" I need to see a real doctor. So I did. I went to see one of my real doctor friends and said, "What do you think I should do?" And they said, "You treated vertigo. Live with it. It takes a while. And it does. But there are some treatments you can do while your body heals. There's nothing that you can do for vertigo that's viral to make it heal quicker. But there are things you can do that can help you. First of all, lying in bed, and when you get up in the morning or you're going from a sitting position, anything where you've been in for a while, realize your head's going to spin for a bit. And so don't stand up quickly. Sort of sit on the side of the bed for a second or 2 seconds or 5 or 10 seconds and then stand up. Find out how not to trigger it. And then the treatment basically are antihistamines, and they work. And you can take a non-sedating antihistamine like generic Claritin, but one 10-milligram tablet really doesn't work that well. You've got to probably take one tablet 2 to 3 times a day to work. And then there's an over-the-counter pill called Bonine, B-O-N-N-I-N-E. And it's sold as something for people who go out on boats and get basically seasick. And that works even better. It makes some people a little too sleepy. But Bonine, 25 milligrams once or twice a day, 1 to 2 tablets twice a day, that'll work for
you. Have you found it to be something that does recur over time? Because it's
for
like,
some people,
people said, like...
For some people it does. And I must tell you, for me, this was about 5 years ago, it recurred intermittently for about a year. And then it disappears. And now it doesn't occur very often. But I'll still get it occasionally. It'll last for a day and then it disappears.
I've had it on and off throughout my life.
Oh, see. Oh, really? Is that why you're dizzy?
Some serious episodes. I actually have had my brain scanned because I thought there
you
was...
You did have your brain scanned.
And I have
what
proof.
Did they find?
I have
what
proof. I have an excellent brain.
Oh, really? So
yeah.
It was brain scanned.
How many people can say they have doctor's certification that they have an excellent brain?
A for excellent. A for excellent.
Here's a pop quiz. Who starred in Hitchcock's Vertigo?
Oh, I know. Wait a minute. Is this a stump the doc question?
No.
Oh. Then I don't know the answer.
You don't really? You haven't seen that movie?
Well, I've seen it, but I don't remember who starred it.
You don't remember? Jimmy Stewart?
Oh, Jimmy Stewart. Oh, yeah.
Who was the woman?
I have no idea. I don't have
I'm
any
not
idea.
Sure. I think it was Kim Novak.
Kim Novak and Jimmy
I believe
Stewart.
I'm right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, well, if you're
if
not
I'm
right,
wrong, we will
somebody
hear about
will
it.
Let you know.
Thank you to the caller.
Thank you.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. To a listener now, Zorba, in Lake Nabagamon, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Fine. How
Good.
Can we help?
Well, growing up, I always ate shrimp.
Mm-hmm.
And about 28 years ago, I was 6 weeks pregnant,
mm-hmm.
went out for dinner, had shrimp, and went home the next morning. I woke up, and the reaction began. My hands were swelling a little bit. I had a rash. Was really itchy. Well, as the day goes on, it got worse, and pretty soon, you know, my voice started going, and my throat started tightening up a little bit. So I went to the hospital, and I believe he said they gave me a shot of adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
And that took care of it.
Of course, of course. Uh-huh.
And so now... 28 years later,
mm-hmm.
I was going to start taking some glucosamine, chondroitin sulfate, because I have friends that take it and they think it's great.
Mm-hmm.
But every time I go to pick up a bottle, I look at it and it says contains shellfish.
Mm-hmm.
You
shouldn't. You should not take it. I don't
really?
Think you should take it. Well, first of all,
okay.
There's not a lot of scientific evidence that shows that glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate actually will improve the joint pain that you have. There's some scientific evidence, but not a lot.
Okay.
One of the issues that I now have as a big issue with any supplement that you take is the Latin term primum non nocere, first do no harm. And I think it's a big issue. And I've got a patient, for instance, in my office now who has elevated a liver, what we call liver function test, shows that his liver is under a lot of stress, and we are 100% now assured, we now know that it's one of the Chinese herbs that he was taking that he thought was benign, and he was taking it because he thought it gave him vim and vigor and health and vitality, and the fact is he was taking an herb that in the meantime was having issues with his liver because he stopped the herb and it went away and he restarted the herb and these tests became abnormal again after that. It's a big issue. Now, you had a very obvious reaction to shellfish.
Yes.
And serious enough so that you had to go to the hospital. You should never have anything with shellfish.
Okay.
It's made with shellfish. And
okay.
One of the issues with supplements is they have very poor quality control. They are controlled the same way a cosmetic is controlled.
Okay.
It's under the same goofy federal guideline passed by Congress. They don't allow the FDA to control it for potency mm-hmm. or even quality control. So uh-huh. you might have a, you know, bottle X chondroitin sulfate and be fine. And then you get another bottle and all of a sudden they're using a different concoction with more shellfish and more iodine, and then you get a reaction to that. So I would say, no way.
No way.
If you have
it.
Joint pain, mm-hmm. what you do is you take Tylenol, you know, a couple Tylenol 2 to 4 times a day, or you take 2 Aleve tablets over the counter twice a day. Those are the issues that I would deal with the joint pain, or deal with it in another supplement. Deal with it with walking activity. All these things will help. Stretching activities. Yoga is an excellent non-pharmacological way to begin to deal with joint pain. Yeah. But do you have a hankering to eat shellfish all of a sudden? You've been living this life, you know, without it.
No, it would be worse if I was allergic to chocolate.
Yeah.
Chocolate, like. But, you know, if you go places down south, and there's a lot of, yeah. of wonderful shellfish,
yes,
you'd
yes.
like to have some, but
yes, yes.
I'll avoid it.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. You mentioned in the intro, Zorba, some research on drinking in college. This is a serious concern, I know, in lots of colleges, too much alcohol consumption.
Oh, it's a very serious concern. It's a
And I think it's a growing concern.
Well, first of all, it should be a concern because it's a big issue. It's a big issue with the safety of kids who are in college, mm-hmm. and it's a big issue with college kids when they become adults. And alcohol, we've dropped alcohol consumption in this country. If you look at it over the last 100 years, 50 years, even 30 years, alcohol consumption has dropped. On the other hand, it's still an issue. It's especially an issue where we do the show in Wisconsin because culturally it's a very acceptable thing to binge drink on the weekends, and we are the number one state for binge drinking, always number one or number two. Milwaukee is the number one city for binge drinking in the country.
Yeah.
One of the issues that they've tried is filling out questionnaires when they come in and saying how much do you drink, and then counseling, which I think is very, very useful. And then colleges, a number of colleges have actually banned alcohol completely on campus. I think that's useful. I think at fraternities and sororities, it's useful. But the problem is really a social one. It's a cultural one. It's not going to change until our culture says, just like smoking cigarettes, that drinking during college ages has to be curtailed. Now, does it curtail to zero? It's not really acceptable in for a lot of people's minds, but it should curtail to a point where it's...
Is this an American problem? I mean, do other countries, do young people, do you know... at 18 or 21?
I don't know internationally what the statistics are. I mean, they certainly drink in other countries, in places like Holland, drinking when you're 14
or 15.
But I don't
think it's such a rite of passage in other countries as it is in the United States.
It may be in this...
I'm an adult, now I can go out and get drunk.
Right, and now I'm in college and I can drink, and of course you don't drink in high school. It's not legal to drink. Some drink in high school, and so, but that's what I mean. It's a cultural issue, and then even the concept of sensible drinking is something that no one likes to discuss. As a physician, you know, how do I say drink sensibly to somebody who is 20 in college when it's illegal for somebody who's 20 in college to drink? But that's the problem. The problem is a society issue. And I think talking about it is very important, just like talking about cigarette smoking. Maybe that's how we actually come up with an answer for this. And it's not an idea that you're trying to kill people's fun. You certainly can be fun, not drink, and keep it legal. But the problem is, you know, it's sort of like society turns a blind eye and say, well, you shouldn't drink until you're 21, but accepts that kids in college drink all the time.
Yeah.
Why? Because kids in college drink all the time because often their parents drank in college and their grandparents drank in college.
Well, what about when you were in college? And,
yeah, there's
and
always...
when I was in college, I drank when I was in college.
Well, absolutely. And it was legal to drink at that time at 18.
Yeah.
And in Wisconsin, they sold beer right in the Union, as they do right now. They actually sell beer right on campus. But I think it's an important thing to talk about because, among other things, what many college students don't realize is that binge drinking is a big issue in terms of their health and wellness. So they may not drink during the week, and then they drink to get drunk on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and that then is acceptable. And in fact, it really should be an unacceptable thing. So I think this is something that even talking about it on public radio really does make sense.
Yeah. 800-462-7413. To a listener now, Zorba, in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Fine. What's up?
Well, love your show, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much.
Awesome. I had this popping sensation in my kind of near my Adam's apple when I swallow, and it feels like I'm swallowing something rigid, for lack of a way to. I really don't know how to describe it. I get this weird feeling, and it's been going on for several years, but here lately it's gotten progressively worse, and it really doesn't hurt. Or like to touch it, or when I swallow it doesn't hurt, it just bothers me.
Have you had your throat looked at by anybody?
Not yet, I haven't.
Uh-huh. So this is when you swallow liquids, solids?
Well, no, actually, the strange thing is that it's usually only whenever I'm just swallowing saliva.
Mm-hmm.
When I swallow, if I have food or liquid that I'm drinking, it doesn't seem to I can't even feel anything, actually. But it's just when I'm swallowing nothing.
Sure.
So
how much alcohol do you drink? How much booze do you drink?
Well,
it's an interesting question, isn't it?
Not near enough.
Not enough.
Maybe, you know, I'm not, you know, just a social, maybe I might have consume a 12-pack a year, maybe. Or
12-pack a year is not what I call a lot, especially after we're talking about binge drinking.
Right. I know, just hearing that. So
it's not
near that bad. But
how much coffee do you drink?
Quite a bit.
Quite a bit of coffee, okay.
Yes, I do. I drink I've cut back to, like I tell my wife, I've cut back to one pot a day. So.
Okay, one pot a day. Let me tell you what I think it may be and then what you really have to do to follow this up. First of all, this could be acid reflux. Acid reflux can feel like globus, where you have this sort of full feeling in this throat, just what you're describing, sometimes near the mandible, below the mandible. Best drug, over-the-counter, not expensive, Prilosec, OTC. Don't follow the instructions. The instructions say only take for 2 weeks, and that's because the FDA just puts that for over-the-counter meds. What I would start out with is I would take one a day for a couple of weeks, and then if you're not any better, I double it to two a day. That's what I would do, and I do that for a month. If it goes away, you've got your answer. You don't have to go any further. If it does not go away, you need to be scoped. You need to look at and see what this is. And the reason is you could have a tightening or constriction of the esophagus. There could be something that's occurring above or below. You could have something called Barrett's esophagitis, which is sort of this thickening of the esophagus that can be a precursor to cancer. Or you could have a narrowing of the esophagus, not unusual, just on its own. And they put down these tubes that kind of stretch it out. So if the Prilosec doesn't work, you need to be scoped.
Okay, you say Prilosec, just OTC?
That's what it's called, Prilosec OTC, 20 milligram tablets or capsules. At the end of 1 week, one to 2 weeks, if you don't find relief, double the dose. At the end of a month, if you don't find relief, you know, 2 more weeks on that double dose, then you need to be scoped. Call your doc and say, I've got this happening. Do you want to see me or do I need to be scoped?
Well, let's try this before we go. Zorba, you look at the microphone.
Okay, I'm looking there. Open up your mouth.
Open your mouth and say,
open up your mouth. Let's look down and see. Okay.
What do you think, Zorba?
It would take quite a long tongue depressor, though, right?
Hard to say. A little dark in there when I'm looking.
Okay, well, yeah, I'll try that then. Thank you very much.
Thank
I appreciate
you.
It.
Thanks a lot for
enjoy
the call.
Your show.
Thank you very much. 800-462-7413. Zorba, before the break, let's take a listener tip from our Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox. This one comes to us from Sharon in the Midwest. It concerns a caller we had on a while ago complaining that sitting at her desk all day was making her knees ache. Do you remember that?
Yes,
one?
I do. Yes, I do.
Well, here's Sharon's solution. I sit at my desk most of the day, too. I have an online desk exercise program called Ergosize.
Wow.
It pops
Ergosize.
Up, it pops up to remind me to stretch and even offers stretches that I can do at my desk.
Fabulous.
It's free, and I'm sure there are other similar programs out there on the web.
That is fantastic. What a great idea. What a great idea.
I think it's a little irritating.
Well,
you're sitting there at the computer doing your thing, all of a sudden, Ergosize, Ergosize, Ergosize. Oh, my goodness. All right. Stretch. I'd hate
that. Just imagine in a Dilbert-type office, what it would be like. Like, all of a sudden, it pops up and everyone's kind of moving around. right. Move it around, you know. And then they're back and then it's normal.
Anyway.
Depends on how often it pops up. If it's once every five or six minutes, that would be very disruptive.
But every now and then you think it'd be a good idea.
I love it. I think it's great.
Well, if you're sitting at your desk all day, why not send us one of your tips in between stretches, of course. Just send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Lots more coming up here. Our recipe is next.
Yes, swordfish steaks with olive salsa.
Lots of your calls and lots of other goodies, too, here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Want to talk with Zorba? Give us a call. Back to the phones. After our recipe for swordfish steaks with olive salsa.
It's great. It's great. Now, you said you don't have a hankering for olives.
No, I know Adam Friedrich, our program producer, has prepared the bad part of this recipe and left out the good part of this. The swordfish would be delicious. Do we have swordfish sitting here?
Yes.
No.
Yes,
do we have olive stuff sitting? Yes.
Yes, but I love olives. Olives are like, you know, I can't imagine a society without olives. I mean, I think olives
are essential. You'll get a whole lot more than I will have.
Of course, olive oil is good. But I want to talk about this recipe, the importance of this recipe, and how good it is. And when you look at it, it serves two people. We're using 2 8-ounce sword steaks. But when you analyze the recipe, you say, hey, it looks good. 282 calories. That's not a lot of calories for a main dish. And you look down at the fat. It says 13.89 grams of fat. And you say, wait a minute. Maybe this is a high-fat recipe. The answer is no. It's not a high-fat recipe in that it doesn't have high bad fat. In other words, there's good oil and there's bad oil. Mm-hmm. The oil that comes from fish, the oil that comes from olives are basically good oil. If it had 13, 14 grams and it was saturated fat, we'll say, from pork rinds, it would not be good oil. Then you look down and you realize this particular recipe has nearly 60% of the protein you need for your entire day. So it's a very, very protein. It's a high protein and good oil.
Yep.
Good oil. I like to use the word oil versus fat because fat sort of is pejorative, but you can call it fat or oil. It has good oil and it's high protein, and that's what makes this a good
recipe. That's the best of both worlds.
Yeah, it's the best of both worlds. Yeah. And of course, it uses olives, which I love. So for me, it's good.
Yeah.
Start out with a half teaspoon of oregano.
Half a little tea oregano.
Regular oregano that you have there. When I buy oregano, you can buy it in very large containers and it seems to last, but I think it goes after a while. So I like to buy good oregano from a good source, a good spice maker, and I often will substitute for oregano an Italian spice mix, which is a dry
mix. But you don't
mix.
Buy a lot at a time because it
goes
bad.
No, I buy small. I think it's not as good. It's not as potent.
Yeah.
1 tablespoonful plus another 2 teaspoons of fresh lemon juice.
1 big tea and 2 little tea. Fresh lemon juice.
Fresh is always the best. And if not, frozen is after that. And after that, then you go to the stuff in the bottle. But fresh, it just is much, much better.
Stay away from the bottle.
That's right. Stay away from the bottle. There you go. 2 teaspoons of olive oil.
2 little tea olive oil.
Extra virgin, of course. Mm-hmm. 2 8-ounce sword steaks.
2 8-ounce swordfish steaks.
And 1/2 cup of black olives. You know, the really good kind that are more expensive. They're the brine cured, pitted, and you want to chop them. And these are the Kalamata olives.
The good kind.
The good kind. The good kind.
Half
Kalamata
a cup
olives.
Of them. Okay.
That's right. That's right. You could use other olives. You could use Greek olives if you wanted to in there, but this is really good with Kalamatas.
Mm-hmm.
1 plum tomato, seeded and diced.
1 plum tomato, seeded and diced.
1/4 cup of diced red onions.
1/4 cup diced red onions.
1 tablespoonful of chopped fresh parsley leaves, not the dried stuff at all.
A big tea of chopped fresh parsley leaves.
Half a teaspoon of freshly grated lemon zest.
Half a little tea, freshly grated lemon zest.
That's right. That gives it that nice smell. Mm-hmm. Salt and pepper to taste. S-O-P. If you have kosher salt, it will really taste better. And some lemon wedges to garnish.
It all sounds great. You could leave the olives out if you wanted to.
Yeah, you could actually leave the olives out, but I don't think it would taste the same.
Yeah.
So here, on a plate, stir together the oregano, a tablespoonful of lemon juice, a teaspoon of olive oil. Dip both sides of the swordfish steak in this mixture to coat. So the oregano, the lemon juice, and the olive oil. Mm-hmm. You're just coating that. Put it on a rack in a broiling pan. Add a little salt and pepper again. And try to use kosher salt to taste better. Then the salsa in a bowl. Mix together the olives, the tomatoes, onions, parsley, lemon zest, remaining lemon juice, remaining olive oil, S&P to taste. And then, of course, what you do is you broil the coated swordfish steaks according to a cookbook. My favorite is Cook's Illustrated. Roughly 3 minutes on each side until the center is opaque. Remove to the plate and then spoon the salsa over it and garnish it with a lemon. How does it taste?
The salsa is excellent, except for the olive smell.
Yes.
I'm picking around the olives.
Yeah. Oh, you like it. You like it without the olives. See, I like it with the olives. Let me just taste it with the olives.
That's excellent. Excellent. Isn't that good? Leave the olives out.
You know, this is a great dip with some rye crisp or something else.
Oh, yeah, wouldn't it? And you could substitute. No, that's all right. You can keep it. You can substitute something for this. You could do it over.
Over what? You could do over anything. You could do this over chicken.
Pork.
It's a wonderful pork. Yeah, you could do it over pork. You could do it over pork loin.
Yeah.
That would be, it's not a white meat, but it's another one. This is scrumptious.
Yeah.
Great job. Delicious. So if you want a copy, go to our website at zorbapastor.org and you can get it.
We're happy to send it to you, too, if you'd like. Just address your request to Zorba Pastor on Your Health, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, zip code 53706. Don't forget to enclose a self-addressed stamped business-sized envelope. We'll be happy to send it along to you. Our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. A listener now, Zorba, in Spokane, Washington. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Hi, question about Lipitor versus vitamin C and the Lipitor making sore muscles. And I just heard a little comment or discussion with a friend about someone taking vitamin C versus the Lipitor or Crestor.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you look at the side effects of the drug statins, they do cause muscle aches. So you mean taking vitamin C for cholesterol versus taking Lipitor or Crestor, one of the other drugs for cholesterol lowering? Is that what you mean?
Yes, correct.
It doesn't do anything. Vitamin C does nothing for cholesterol. Zero. It's not effective. It doesn't do anything. The issue of muscle aches is very interesting. It affects about 1% of the people who take these drugs. And it appears that it may be that one statin may cause a muscle ache and the other one won't. So you have Zocor, which is now generic. You have Lipitor. You have Lescol. You have five drugs basically in the class. So you go through them. If one causes muscle aches, the other one may not. And then it may be a dose-related issue. We know the higher the number of milligrams, the more likely it is to have an ache than another one. Now, are you taking the Lipitor, one of the other drugs, to lower your cholesterol?
Yes, Lipitor.
Uh-huh. And do you have muscle aches?
Yes, it seems to be in my lower legs. I run. Or do aerobic activity.
But let me explain what the muscle aches usually are. The muscle aches that are usually associated with statins are the aches that you feel when you're having the flu or a sore throat or a cold and your muscle just kind of aches. Is that what you feel?
Yes.
Okay, so that may be a side effect. How much Lipitor are you on?
10 milligrams a day.
And 10 milligrams is a small dose. You may want to consider 20 milligrams of generic Zocor, which is now on the market. 10 to 20 of generic Zocor will give you the same thing. 10 may work or 20 may work. And you may switch to Zocor and you may not have the pain. And it's not that Lipitor doesn't and Zocor doesn't. If I have people on Zocor, I switch them to Lipitor and they may not have the pain. It's very, very interesting. They're not exactly the same with side effects. So if I'm having muscle aches and it feels like I'm having the flu, I try a different statin and see if that does it. Because you're on a dose that the other statins will probably work.
Very good.
Good luck. How long have you been on the drug? What else do you do to prevent heart attacks and stroke?
We try try to take flaxseed oil and some other oils.
That's good. That's good.
Exercise.
That's good. That's exactly it. Eating a diet that, you know, is Mediterranean diet that's filled with fruits and vegetables, mm-hmm. that's important. And taking vitamins are good, like vitamin C. But vitamins do not lower cholesterol, and that's a separate risk factor for heart disease and stroke. So keep up that statin, but switch it and see if that makes a difference.
Very good. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. Thanks a lot. 800-462-7413. Question for Zorba? Give us a call. A listener with us now in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Fine. How can we help you?
You can help me by finding me an explanation other than just the fact that I'm getting fat. Why it is when I look at myself in the mirror and I look like I have swallowed a basketball.
So you have a big belly.
Yeah, and you know, and it's the rest of me, I mean, I'm 47 years old, so I'm not a spring chicken, but I'm in pretty good shape. I don't eat a lot of junk. And I've just got this round abdomen. And,
sure.
And I've had it for mm-hmm. a while, you know, and a few years ago, I decided, you know, I'm just going to get rid of it, and I'm going to lose some weight. So mm-hmm. I weigh about 141 right now. And at that time when I lost weight, I went down to about 128 was as low as I got, and it was still there.
Wow.
I'm afraid that, you know, people think I've got Spalding tattooed across my stomach.
So you went down to 128 pounds. What's your height?
I'm 5'2", so I'm not the tallest guy in the world.
Yeah,
either.
But about 128 pounds is definitely round.
Yeah, and when I had my BMI, my body mass index done at the time, it was a little bit below 12. So I thought that I was in pretty good shape, but still I've got this rounded stomach, and I can't believe that I'm fat. I'm just grasping at the straw that I've got a tumor the size of a pinata. So my question is, I mean, when you get older, your organs just south and your abdominal muscles just start to slacken. And
there are a number of kind of things that are going on. Your BMI, by the way, couldn't be 12. Your BMI was probably in the 20s with 5'2 and 126. I don't have the little calculator, but you were definitely not overweight. Mm-hmm. People are born differently. They really are born differently. So some people are short-waisted, some people are long-waisted. Mm-hmm. Some people are born with a much stronger musculature. If you look at guys, for instance, and they have a six-pack, a number of them are born that way. You look at their parents and their grandparents. You know, they have tall, thin people who literally are born with thicker muscles, and then they may work out and actually improve those muscles. And some people have an abdominal wall that is frankly much thinner. And so you may get down and be very thin, and you may have still a small belly. The reality is the thinner you get, the smaller the belly it'll be, but it may always be round. Now, there are other things that we look at. People with round bellies can have other problems. You know, if it develops suddenly, of course, they can have a tumor. They can have fluid in their belly. It can be a sign of cirrhosis. A lot of bad medical problems produce just fluid in the belly, and the belly becomes round. But obviously, this is not your case because, you know, you gain weight and you lose weight. And and so I doubt if you have
a I mean, I lift weights three times a week, so I'm relatively athletic and toned.
Yeah.
The rest of my body looks fine. I just have this, you know, round abdomen.
Well, it's just the way that you're born. Let me ask you about your mom and your dad. Mm-hmm. What do they look like?
My dad is 5'5", they're both in their 80s now, but so when they were younger, they were a little taller.
Yeah.
But my dad's 5'5", and you know, he's probably doesn't exhibit exactly the same stomach that I exhibit now. And my mom is like 4'9", mm-hmm. and still in pretty good shape. Neither one of them is particularly overweight.
The long answer and the short answer with the question is basically this is the way you were born. Now, now if you were to starve, you know, you're in a starvation type situation where you actually lose muscle mass, your belly would still get smaller, but it probably would never not appear, have this sort of roundish type appearance. And that's it. You're on the other end of the scale from the guy who was on the Abercrombie and Fitch billboard I saw the other day, you know, who's got a six-pack.
Well,
and
I have the answer to this one.
Well, what's the answer?
Well, you shave in the morning?
Yes.
Yeah. You look in the mirror when you shave, right?
Yes.
In the mirror, and you don't see all the way down your whole body.
Yeah.
I can see, well, yeah, it's, you know, not down to my knees, for example.
Well, you can see your belly when you look in that mirror? Well, get a higher mirror.
I think I have to go the other way, and I have to actually embrace it. You know, I mean, I'm going to give it a name, like, I don't know, Murray.
Oh, there you go.
Tom Hanks talked to that volleyball in Castaway.
There you go.
Learn to love your fat belly.
Embrace your fat belly.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Take care.
Thank you.
Zorba, a question from our Zorba Pastor on Your Health mailbox, which comes to us from an inmate at Draper Prison in Alabama.
Okay.
We're big in prisons.
We're huge in prisons.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Have you heard of a captive audience?
Oh, gosh, Tom. Oh,
anyway.
It's like a Jack Benny joke.
He writes, is it harmful to the body to be on a constant diet of beef hearts? He says, instead of hamburger, they use beef hearts for everything at Draper Prison. Mm-hmm. One batch consists of 40 pounds beef hearts, 40 pounds of textured vegetable protein, 20 pounds of beef fat, one 12-ounce flavor package.
12-ounce flavor package.
Meatloaf, sausage, etc. I am not from Alabama, where they eat anything that doesn't eat them first. But can eating beef hearts every day be good for you?
Well, the issue with beef hearts is that it's beef. That's the issue. It's that 20 pounds of beef fat that I really worry about more than the beef hearts, because
well,
beef
isn't organ meat worse for us?
No, well, it's a muscle. It's not the same as organ meat. Liver, kidneys, thymus, they're not the same thing as a beef heart. A beef heart is a muscle. It's a protein. Oh. It's a high protein thing. So beef heart, although I haven't looked up the consistency, is not a high fat item in and of itself. It tends to be something that we don't eat. It doesn't have a lot of fat in it, so it doesn't have that tender taste that we tend to like. And so that's probably why they use it. But I don't think it's any worse than having, we'll say, regular hamburger. I think it's probably in a very similar way. And also, what could you do to change what they're feeding you if you're in prison anyway?
Well, he just wants to. Information here. You know, this is enough.
That's right.
This is enough
that's
to keep me on the straight and narrow.
That's right.
Hearing
that's right.
this recipe that's is going right. to keep me out of that's prison, right. I'll tell
Especially
you that.
Especially if that's something you have to eat every day.
Yeah, I know.
Just
kidding.
Imagine that it's not
but
something.
But you don't think it's that unhealthy?
I think it's as unhealthy as eating beef every day. That's what I think. I think the issue, actually, the 20 pounds of beef fat that goes into it is far more unhealthy than 20 pounds of beef heart. Yes,
the 12-ounce flavor package, that makes
you
it really,
what's in
really
that
delicious.
Package, don't you? You wonder what's in that flavor package.
Anyway, sorry you're in and hope you're out soon and you're away from that
Good luck to
awful
Good luck
sounding
to
me
Good
recipe.
To
please keep sending us your comments, questions, and tips. Just send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
You'll want to stick around for some more research. That coming up, our medical myth buster 2, and more of your calls here on Zorba Pastor and Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. I'm Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Remember that toll-free number. Use it if you have a question for Zorba, 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, some really important information from the AMA.
That's right. Looking basically at drug-related deaths, it is a big issue. And the study looked at essentially a period of time from 1998 through the year 2005 and looked at the occurrence of drug-related deaths. At the beginning of the study, it seemed to be about 34,000 almost per year, up to like 90,000 by the end. The deaths increased from 5,000 a year to 15,000 a year.
Whoa, that's a huge jump in just a very few years.
Big differences. Big issue for the FDA. What are the deaths coming from? When they looked at where the deaths were related to, they were related to biotech drugs, which are very important for certain diseases such as rheumatoid arthritis and multiple sclerosis.
Well, what are those? What are biotech?
They're biotech drugs that essentially reduce our ability to fight disease because they reduce inflammation that is causing disease.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, we reduce inflammation on one hand, and then we have trouble fighting disease on the other hand. And they looked at the use of opioids. Opioids are commonly used to treat pain and discomfort comfort. As you get older, often you have more aches and pains. You use opioids. And frankly, a lot of people unmistakably overdose on them or have problems
with
them.
But now these same drugs were around in 1998 as in 2005.
Right, right.
So what's going on?
Well, that's the question. Now, we've talked about this before. Health literacy is a big issue, especially among senior citizens. A perfect example that a third of the people couldn't answer this question. I've got to take one pill 3 times a day. I'm going to take it in the morning. I'm going to take it when I go to sleep at night. The pill says I must take it 1 hour before meals or 2 hours after meals. I'm going to eat at noon. When do I take my pill?
And they couldn't answer
that. A third of the people could not answer that question. So part of this is understanding drugs, and people just don't understand, and too many drugs.
So do I get it that we're living longer, so there are more older people, and that's part of the problem?
Well, that's part of the problem. The other part of the problem is educating people to the drugs, looking at the side effects. I think this problem has a lot of factors to it. It's not just the type of drugs. It's making sure people take it properly, and that doesn't just mean looking at the label.
Yeah. Now, the AMA is hoping that the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, is going to try to do something.
Well, it's a big issue because of Vioxx. Vioxx changed the way the FDA looks at drugs, and one of the things the FDA is looking at is after drugs are approved, they basically stop looking at them except under rare circumstances. Are some of these drugs really harmful, and should we really take them off the market, or more importantly, not mix them with others? And this is where the FDA has really have to take a leadership.
Our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next caller is with us from Long Island, New York. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine. How can we help?
Yeah, my question for Zorba is on the health benefits of grass-fed meat.
Mm-hmm.
My sister eats very little red meat, and mostly poultry and fish, but a recent checkup revealed that she had borderline high cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking to a professor of hers who's an ecologist and oceanographer, and he was singing the praises of grass-fed meat and how they're much higher in omega-3s. So I was just wondering what Zorba could tell me about that.
Yeah, I wonder too.
There are a couple of interesting things about grass-fed beef, first of all, and I don't know if the ratio of omega-3 fatty acids is higher. I've never seen any evidence of good studies that actually show that. But we know that grass-fed beef tends to be leaner beef because they're out eating on the grass. In other words, they spend more time in order to get their calories, so they tend not to be as fat in terms of the amount of the amount of protein that's there. We know that animals that are fed that are not grass fed, that aren't in a natural grazing type situation, tend to be a fattier animal, and therefore there's more fat. And beef has on the whole saturated fat. So if you're going to look at it from that way, absolutely, I think grass-fed is a great idea because it's going to be a lower-fat item, and that can make a difference. Just like a leaner cut of beef can make a difference, shoulder tends to be much fattier, roast is much fattier, loin is the leanest cut of beef, and that can make a difference. So, so the answer is you sort of finesse it. You say, well, I'm going to eat chicken, because boneless, skinless chicken breast is a high-protein item. It's not beef, but it's certainly much cheaper than eating an equivalent amount of beef protein, which is much more expensive. So I haven't really answered the question. Grass-fed beef is certainly going to be more expensive, and I think if you want to eat beef, which is perfectly fine, and you want to eat the cut that you want to, eat it, but just don't eat it that often.
Right.
And therefore, you have it as a treat. And sometimes I will sit down and have a T-bone steak, which I happen to love, but I certainly wouldn't have a T-bone steak that often. And when I pick a T-bone steak, I usually pick one that is the size that I want, and I enjoy it, and I have it, we'll say, once or twice a summer on the grill, and that's what I'm eating. And on the whole, I, like many other Americans, have shunned away. I eat red meat, but I don't eat nearly the amount that I used to years ago. And I eat much more chicken and much more fish than I used to. And from a protein point of view, fish is fabulous. Finding frozen fish on sale and then cooking it the way that you like to cook it. For me, it's a teriyaki marinade. That's usually my favorite. Or this wonderful, what we did earlier in the show, the swordfish steak with olive salsa. Fabulous way to take any type of a fish you have, and then you can spice up a restaurant. rather relatively bland white fish with some olive salsa, like we have had on the show earlier today that we had, which is great. And once again, grass-fed beef is probably going to be leaner, so it's a good form.
I'm surprised that we don't know about the omega-3. I mean, you think that'd be easy enough to figure out?
Well, or whether or not one shows more. We know that whether or not grass-fed.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think it's
how
ever
hard
been,
would it
it's
be
ever
to find
been
it?
Proven in studies. Well, that's a good question, isn't it? That's right. It may be my ignorance. I have a feeling that some people out there know, and I bet you they'll email us.
Oh, we'll hear.
I bet you.
Thanks a lot for the call. 800-462-7413. Zorba time in the show for our Mythbuster. Dentists might not be too happy with our myth today, but I'm willing to bet it was popular in the old Wild West. Can whiskey relieve a toothache?
The answer to that myth is no. Whiskey does not alleviate a toothache.
I don't believe that for a second.
Very interesting. Now, my mother, who never was a Wild West woman, I mean, she came from Chicago, so she was not a lady of the West.
To your knowledge,
I can remember. My knowledge, she wasn't wild, but who knows before. But I can remember when I was a child having a toothache, and we always had a little whiskey, a little Crown Royal in the house for special occasions. Mm-hmm. And she would force me to drink like a half a shot of whiskey for the toothache because it must have been on a weekend.
Didn't it relieve it?
I just remember I didn't really like the taste, and I was sort of fighting with my mother about the whiskey. The idea is that the alcohol will sort of, when you drink it, will numb it. If it goes on there, the idea, it'll sting it, it'll numb it a little bit, and then it'll sort of take care of the bacteria in the mouth. And if we look at that all the way through, alcohol is really not a great anesthetic. I mean, it's really not good. We tend not to give alcohol, for instance, for anesthesia. If we're having surgery, it doesn't work. Right. It makes you drunk, so you may not fight as much. Does it do much for the numbing of the tooth on a local basis? Not at all. Better to go to a 24-hour drugstore and get Numzit or one of the other numbing products that you can use on your tooth that are used for babies. And does the alcohol actually kill bacteria? Really not very much at all if you're going to use bacteria killing
medicines. Oh, no, that surprises me. I thought it actually did. No, huh?
Not at all. I mean, you can use Listerine that has some alcohol in it or any one of the other mouthwashes, and that works out well. So on the whole, the shot of whiskey, it's thumbs down. But here it is. It's Saturday night. You know, it's hard to get a dentist on Saturday night. You've got a toothache. What would you do, Tom?
Well, I wouldn't take enough whiskey so the tooth wouldn't bother me anymore, which I think really would work.
Right. That's
but
about
I would
the only
not
thing.
Do that.
That's
I would just live the with
thing.
The toothache
now,
until the next
morning.
Would
you go to a 24-hour drugstore and get Numzit to numb on your... No, you wouldn't even bother with that. You'd just go to sleep. Huh?
I'd grit it out. I'm a pretty tough guy.
I think I'd call up a neighbor and see if they had any codeine tablets in the house, too. I think that'd be far more effective. But we busted that myth. A shot of whiskey doesn't really help a toothache.
And if you have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust, we'd love to hear from you. Just send us an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number if you'd like to talk with Zorba. A listener with us now in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello, how are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
I had a question. I smoke cigarettes, quite a few of them, and I'm also lead a very active lifestyle and eat very healthy, mostly vegetarian, occasionally meat, maybe once a week.
Mm-hmm.
Is that better or worse for me than if I were to lead a sedentary lifestyle and eat fast food and not smoke?
Good question. Boy,
in other words, can he have permission to smoke a lot of cigarettes because he has an otherwise healthy lifestyle?
So let me tell you about a story, very important story.
Okay.
In 1957-58, the Surgeon General equivalent in the United Kingdom said smoking causes lung cancer. At that time, 85% of the physicians smoked cigarettes. Within 2 years, 3 years, it dropped down to roughly 20%, 18-20%, and then it continued to trail down from there. Now, physicians are very good at keeping track of their health and surveys. There's a National Health Service in England. They've now followed these physicians for roughly 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what they found. There's a certain amount of benefit of longevity. We all know we are living longer than our ancestors. Mm-hmm. Some of this longevity comes from babies. Babies at birth live longer, at 1 day live longer, at 24 days live longer, and at 5 years live longer, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of it. Take that away and look at longevity for people 10 years of age and older, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Compare those to people who smoked to people who didn't smoke, and what they found was this. 100% of the longevity that we have received since 1890, from 1890 to the years 2000, is totally obliterated by smoking cigarettes. In other words, there is no difference for longevity for a smoker who is 20 versus a non-smoker who lived in 1890. In other words, you lose 100% of the benefit of the longevity that we have put forth in the last roughly 100 and 120 years since smoking cigarettes.
But let me take the listeners.
So smoking is the worst thing.
But yeah. Most smokers don't have the eating habits that our caller has or the exercise regimen that our caller has.
Right. You would think that. But on the whole, in England, the doctors in England who smoke still tend to eat better, they tended to exercise more, and they tended to follow a more righteous lifestyle. So quite the contrary. These are a group of doctors, even though they smoke, the ones who still smoke.
Doctors exercise more than other people do?
They looked at the other factors. So the answer is, yes, you're getting some benefit, but the reality is it's probably 10 times more bang for your buck to give up smoking. Now, the data shows once you quit, it takes about 20 years to go back to roughly the normal age group, and you lose roughly 10 years of life from smoking. So all in all, the smoking is still probably a factor of 5 or 10 more important. How old are you?
I'm 22.
Okay.
I've been smoking for about 3 years.
Now, let me ask you a question. Do you see yourself as smoking for the rest of your life? Do you see yourself at the age of 50 as a smoker?
Probably not.
That's exactly it. So the only question you have is, when do I quit? Mm-hmm. That's your only question. If your answer is...
I have a follow-up question also. I smoke usually like hand-rolled, their American Spirit brand.
Uh-huh.
The natural cigarettes, are those better or worse than the chemically packed?
Well, that's a whole interesting thing. What they've shown now in more recent studies is that the flavorings that they put in cigarettes, the filters that they put in cigarettes, generally are just as destructive as tobacco, and often people bring in more smoke and hold them in for a longer period of time. So I don't think there's probably any difference at all. I think all cigarettes, it's how deeply you inhale it and how long you keep it in.
Oh, yeah, I know cigarettes are bad, and I know I should quit, but I was just curious.
How many do you smoke a day on your hand-rolled cigarettes?
It kind of depends on if I go out drinking or not, but usually around 8 or 9.
Well, when I was your age, that was about the time that I quit smoking, and I hand-rolled cigarettes. I had little cigarette rolling machines, and then I decided one day, I said, I can remember making the statement, I can't afford this, not even thinking about my health. I just thought about the price. So
are you gonna, if you're not going to smoke when you're 50 and you're smoking now, are you going to quit at 49? Or 27?
That's a really good question.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Well, what's the answer?
Well, I'll have to find out later.
How much later?
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for your info.
Thank you.
Zorba, thank you too.
A pleasure.
For a copy of this week's recipe and all things Zorba, visit us on the web.
At ZorbaPastor.org.
And don't forget, our producer is available anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Our executive producer, Charles Monroe Kane. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director. Gigi Holland fills your recipe requests. Our theme music by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark. Expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0915Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.